Number 11A.
We start today with Romans, and we have chosen Romans for the sole purpose that here we have a letter to Rome written by Paul in the Christ order. We have taken that because it's a very simple presentation of that Christ order, not too intricate, because also in the Old Testament and in the Gospels, we have books that are written in the Christ order. For instance, Mark is written in the Christ order. 2 Kings is written in the Christ order. Jeremiah is written in the Christ order, and so on. But they are all presentations that are rather long in the text-wise. So we have taken just this because the text is shorter. The message is rather clear. It can be overseen easily, so that we really take that text only as an illustration for the Christ order again. Now, this shows one thing, namely that Mrs. Eddy did not invent the Christ order, so that order which we have in the textbook is actually an order that has been known or felt, that we don't know, or felt over many, many ages. That right in the Old Testament, those people who were listening to God speaking, that they already could catch the flow of the Christ. They could catch really that Christ order which says, I go out from the divine principle, God, and this is the infinite Godhead as life, truth, and love. And that infinite Godhead translates itself constantly to soul, to Israel, to the people here, to the message that Paul gives to the brethren in Rome, translates itself to soul and brings out in each one the qualities of spirit so as to be the doer's mind of the world, of the world. So can you see that if we contemplate here now Romans, we only take the symbolization that he has taken, but we actually want to translate it right back into our language of science, so to strengthen within us the feel of a Christ translation. That's what I want to bring out, so that it gives, with another illustration, the feel of that terrific waterfall of the grace of God given unto us as a gift of God that constantly comes to us if we stay faithful in the Word, in faith. Yes. Well, perhaps many may have had difficulty with Paul's language. I don't know if it was easy to read his language, if it was easy to follow his way of reasoning, because Paul was, so to say, the very first one in the whole of the Bible teaching that began to reason things out with his readers. In the Old Testament, you don't have that. In the Old Testament, it's just stating what God is or stating what the prophets have seen, and therefore just presenting that revelation. They were not reasoned very much with Israel. Even the Gospels actually do not reason things out. They chronicle what has happened as the man Jesus. But when it comes to Paul, he's the first one to reason, to say why he's saying what he says, to support his sayings by discussing it, arguing it, and showing the reasons for his letters, for his message. Therefore, perhaps the Bible reader, when it comes to Paul's letter, has at first a bit difficulty. He may also have first a little bit difficulty because he has to put himself into the situation of 2,000 years ago in order to understand the problems that Paul was taking up, all about the law and about circumcision, all about grace, the gift of grace, which was the central point of his teaching and naturally was the central problem that the Jews had to meet at that time. When Paul was writing to these various churches, he was writing actually to Jewish churches, wherein there was already some kind of a Christian movement, but usually they were the churches, group of the Jews to the synagogue in those places, and little by little the movement of the Christian crystallized, and so he had to talk very often to the Jews, but also he had to talk to the Gentiles. Paul was the one who broke open that restricting law that only those who are from Israel, from Father Abraham, those who are circumcised, could inherit really heaven. And so he was quite a character of the terrific world power to break open that restriction, break that narrowness, and to show really that God is a universal principle, and that therefore men universally, Jews and Gentiles, could take part of this principle. This is what one has to understand in order to understand his way of reasoning. Actually, today we could say, well, we are not concerned with circumcision and uncircumcised people. It is way back. But the problem that is indicated by it or is symbolized by it is still the same today. And therefore, also in this way, Romans has a great impact, I would say, on our lives. It is quite an interesting feature, too, when one considers what was Paul's message or mission compared with those of the four Gospels. I think it's interesting if you would once make the comparison what Paul actually was achieving or doing and what subject he was touching on compared with those of the Gospel. In the Gospel we learn to know a lot about Jesus as a man, then about Jesus as the Son of God, a lot about Jesus as the healer and surgeon, a lot about the true manhood, like in Luke. We hear a lot about his healings and healing incidents, but when it comes to Paul, we are somehow astonished how little he writes about Jesus in this way. There is hardly any reference to Jesus' healing work, hardly any reference to Jesus' life at all, except only one thing that always stands out, namely that Jesus was crucified, that he was resurrected and ascended. This is the big subject that Paul takes up, the immortality of life, that we have seen here in Jesus' life, an example, that example, you really could say, that life is immortal, that time old question, is man immortal or is he not, is really the central point of his message, and that attracted his attention, and it is actually on this point that he makes the biggest or the broadest reference to the Gospel, in the Epistle. Then there is another point which characterizes him, and that is that he doesn't see that the Old Testament and the New Testament are actually two different testaments. He shows that what Jesus was bringing forth and showing was actually nothing else but the fulfillment of the law, and therefore the logical consequence of the Old Testament. He always falls back to the Old Testament if he wants to explain something about Jesus' mission. As if he would say, look here, he is not something new in so far that he has broken away from the Old Testament. He really came to fulfill the Old Testament and nothing else. And I think in this light we can understand perhaps better what he wrote in Romans. Romans is the first epistle within the Bible. Doesn't mean that it was the first epistle written, but those who canonized the New Testament, they put Romans in the first place. We know that all those epistles of the apostles form a matrix, that there are 16 messages, and that they form a complete matrix of Christianity, as I presented it in my book on the epistles, and that here within that matrix of Christianity, really Romans is the cornerstone, the word of the word, namely the cornerstone of Christianity. When I say the word of the word, actually it is not the word of the word in its purity, because it is under that great big roof category of Christianity. So actually all those epistles have overall tone of Christianity, and within that Christianity, from the point of view of word of word, Romans gives is the message. I say that so that we are clear about the following point, that when we consider now the Christ order in it, that Christ order, again, is under the overall roof category of Christianity. It's still a stone within the matrix of Christianity. Therefore, we will encounter in this Christ order a bit a different tonality than what we did yesterday when we went through the Christ order as it is given by Mrs. Eddy in the textbook, which has the overall tone of science. So we will see that there are some kinds of shadings. Now what will be the shading in it? The shading naturally in it will be, because it's all in the overall roof category of Christianity, that in the focal point we have man, the true concept of man. So that the message of Romans is naturally centered to bring out that man, Christianity, that man, which we will find if we understand Romans, if we understand the new message, namely the Christ message, that Christ is that which comes from God and brings out in man the Christ idea. So, in so far, we see here a very strong accentuation of the Christian man, of the man as the idea of God. And in order to show that man is the idea of God, he naturally has to show that it came from God. And in showing that it came from God, we have the Christ direction from God to man, you see? And therefore, in showing that he came from God, he has to show him how he came from God. We have seen that Christ's order is to show the how the translation takes place, and therefore those seven big subjects in Romans show us the step-by-step deduction from the divine principle right down to the doers of the word in Romans at the point of mind. Yes. I think that perhaps an overall view of what we will encounter in Romans. Did the study of Romans give you any difficulties, or was it easy? Well, it became easier, which means that at the beginning it's not so easy. He speaks a completely new language. When I studied Paul's letters, I had a lot of difficulty at the beginning. It took me about 2 or 3 months until I was in the flow, but that was perhaps because right before I was studying for 2 or 3 years the prophets, and actually the prophets speak a completely different language. It's the language of revelation, the language of the pouring out of the message that God gave to those prophets. Whereas when it comes to Paul, he is trained in thinking, he was well cultured and schooled in reasoning, in logical reasoning, and so for the first time in the Bible, we are faced, so to say, with reasoning. Therefore, in a way, Paul's way of writing should be that which comes nearest to Mrs. Eddy's writing, because she too is reasoning things out. Yes. All right. Now, if we go to Romans, we have seen there that the central message on which he always plays, not only in Romans but all through his letters, is the central point that he must have seen when he has seen the Christ. It has touched him. How? What is Paul's central theme? What could you say that was his central theme? Yeah. Grace instead of the law. Yeah. And another point perhaps that is equally important, faith. Yeah. So law, grace, and faith are the central terms with which he reasons, and he reasons how, what is the place value of these three terms, how do they link together, yeah? What is the, why does he take up these 3 points, and what is the inner explanation of it, yeah, please? Yes, yeah. So the two opposite terms are actually faith versus the law, the works of the law, and showing that grace is the recompense, the reward for faith, whereas the Jewish doctrine was that if you keep the law and do the works of the law, that you will perhaps be rewarded in heaven. So we can see here something that has infiltrated also Christianity up to the day, namely that the Old Testament concept that we have to do the works of the law, that only that will bring us into heaven. So that if we have not kept the law here, we will not be rewarded afterwards. And this is still a very great theme, even in Christian theology. Whereas Paul has seen something new. He has seen that we are really saved not through the works of the law, but through faith, whatever he understood under the term faith. And that faith would make us a partaker of God, and that therefore we would get the reward as a gift, not as a recompense, as a gift of grace. That's what he has seen. This is naturally contrary to the Jewish law, as it has been taught. But then Paul does what is strong point. He goes and says, you know, the laws that the Jews had are actually not the law of the Old Testament. and therefore he takes out of the Old Testament always those passages which would show, like in Habakkuk already, that we live by faith. That actually Abraham, before he was circumcised, before the circumcision, he was given the promise to be the father of Israel. So that he got that promise through faith, through being faithful to the promise and sticking to the promise. We'll see that later. So that he tried to show that what the Jewish law was saying is actually not what the Old Testament was teaching. And that if we would see what the Old Testament was teaching, that we would easily understand that what Jesus presented was nothing but the fulfillment of the Old Testament. Namely, that we live by faith, and not by the works of the law. That was his great point. So that this brought him naturally to another point, which even today not accepted in Christian theology, namely that therefore man is the saint of God. That man is not a mortal, a sinner, but the saint of God. He always addresses man, he addresses his brethren as saints, because he could see that man fundamentally is that idea which we get when the Christ translation takes place, that God only translates himself to the point of man as saint, as the idea of God, and in no other way. That man, as it says, is righteous before God, sanctified of God, to see a completely different attitude than usually Christian theology presents. It's also perhaps of interest that the leading theologian of our times, and I think under which you can list Karl Barth, I think he's well known also in this country in the theological field, that he really got his whole new theology from Romans. That was that book which overturned him, and therefore his whole new theology, which is accepted by large in the Protestant churches, Europe and in America, was actually built on Romans. Here it is brought out so clearly, you see, that man is the beloved of God, is the sanctified of God, is righteous before God, that he is saint, God's saint. We would say God's idea. Yes. So this is what he wants to present. And there is another term that we may have to consider, which gives perhaps some kind of a wrong interpretation. He speaks a lot about righteousness. And naturally, with that righteousness, he means something else than when we talk about righteousness, with human righteousness, being a righteous man. We usually speak about a righteous man in the sense that of a man that always does right and is giving right judgment and so on. Whereas he, in his language, it means something else. He didn't have a term at his time, which we have today, namely principle. And in order to bring out a principle, or the principle, that God is principle, he had to use the term that God is righteous, that God's judgment is righteous. And therefore, the righteousness of the true man is what we would say is a principled man. He makes then a difference between the righteousness which is before God and the righteousness which is before man. In order to bring out that great difference between the divine righteousness and human righteousness, and he falls back to Isaiah, you know, it is said that human righteousness is like filthy rags, isn't worth much, and so he tries to lift up that righteousness, that self-righteousness which he had seen in the Jews, in the rabbis, in the scribes, and so on, and tries to lift it up to a spiritual plane, to the righteousness which is before God, principle.